Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On October 13th, 2020, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments regarding United States v. Collins, a case consolidated with United States v. Briggs. The question before the court was whether the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces erred in concluding, contrary to its own long-standing precedent, that the Uniform Code of Military Justice allows prosecution of a rape that occurred between 1986 and 2006 only if it was discovered and charged within 5 years. Arthur Reiser and Richard Sala join us to discuss this case's oral arguments. Reiser is the director of the Criminal Justice and Civil Liberties Program and resident senior fellow at the R Street Institute. Sala is an assistant professor of law at the Vermont Law School.
I'm just going to start out with a little bit of a summary of facts, some procedural history, and make sure that we put a fine point on the issue. So I'll just be brief as to the facts because a general retelling of the facts serves our purposes for today. United States versus Collins consolidates three cases, United States versus Briggs, United States versus Collins, and United States versus Humphrey Daniels. In each case, a member of the military, in these cases, the United States Air Force, is charged, tried, and convicted of rape at general court-martial. Each of the trials takes place well after the rape occurred. Briggs is convicted 8 years after the rape, Collins 16 years after the rape, and Humphrey Daniels 17 years after the rape. To understand the procedural history, we have to step back to 2018 to a case that actually isn't one of the consolidated cases. And that case is United States versus Mangahas. In short, Mangahas was a 2015 prosecution for a rape committed in 1997. And when Mangahas came before the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, CAF overruled its prior decision, deciding that Coker versus Georgia is controlling. In other words, rape is not punishable by death in the military context. And as a result, where rape had not been previously time-barred, it was now subject to a 5-year statute of limitations. So how did the court get there? Let's unpack the Uniform Code of Military Justice a little bit. So we can start with Article 18. Article 18 provides for jurisdiction of general courts-martial. And in pertinent part, it provides that general court-martials have jurisdiction to try persons subject to the chapter for any offense made punishable by the chapter, including the penalty of death when specifically authorized by the chapter. And then we look to Article 43, which provides the statute of limitations. And Article 43 states, a person charged with any offense punishable by death may be tried and punished at any time without limitation. And everything else, with some exceptions, is subject to a 5-year statute of limitations. So finally, we turn to the punitive article, Article 120, which is rape and carnal knowledge, which states that any person subject to this chapter who commits an act of sexual intercourse by force and without consent is guilty of rape and shall be punished by death or such other punishment as a court-martial may direct. And so that's the kind of the whirlwind tour of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, or at least the pertinent parts. And so then we turn back to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces in Mangahas. And there, CAF decides that Coker is controlling in the military context, and as a result, the death penalty could never be imposed for the charged offense. The upshot of that is that the offense isn't punishable by death for the purposes of Article 43, the statute of limitations, so the default 5-year statute of limitations is applied. At the same time Mangahas is decided, Collins is pending appeal at the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals. The Air Force Court applies Mangahas and reverses Collins' conviction as being time-barred. The Air Force Judge Advocate General certifies the limitations issue in Collins to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces for appellate review. And while that's in the pipeline, CAF decides Briggs, reaffirming Mangahas, and then affirms the Air Force Court's reversal in Collins. Likewise, with Humphrey Daniels, it goes to the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, and they reverse Daniels' conviction. Subsequently, the Supreme Court grants the writ of certiorari on this issue. Whether the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces erred in concluding, contrary to its own longstanding precedent, that the Uniform Code of Military Justice allows prosecution of a rape that occurred between 1986 and 2006 only if it was discovered and charged within 5 years. So that's where we are coming into oral arguments, and I'll just briefly say both sides lean into oral argument, arguing statutory interpretation. In other words, neither side is leading with the Eighth Amendment issue of whether the Coker v. Georgia and Kennedy v. Louisiana analysis apply, although both are forced to address the issue during the ensuing back and forth with the justices. And I think with that, I will turn it over to Arthur to talk about oral arguments.
Thank you so much, Richard. I really appreciate it. And thank you for being with us. I think it's also important that you hear a little bit, just a tiny bit more about our background. I think it'll add some contours and some textures to what we're going to say. I think it's, I always find it frustrating when speakers act like they're so unbiased and they have transcended biased opinions. Both Professor Sala and myself come from a military background. I was a police officer and a federal prosecutor, but I also served 20 years in the U.S. Army. I served as an armor officer and as a military police officer. So I was the guy that was, putting handcuffs on people. And Professor Sala, served 20-plus years in the Marine Corps, both enlisted and as an officer and retired as a field grade officer. And his last as an officer, he served as a JAG officer. And a good chunk of that time, he was actually a prosecutor working on many of these types of cases. So I think it's important that you kind of understand that as we go through this, because I think it's important to understand the lens that we're looking through as we talk about these. So what I'm going to do really, really briefly is I'm going to talk about the main points for the government and the main points for the petitioner. And then later on, I'm going to talk a little bit, I'll go a little bit deeper about some of the questions from the justices and how I think that it gave a highlight of how things are going to kind of play out. And this is my opinion. Obviously, you never know what's going to actually take place. So the main points from Acting Solicitor General Wall, who is obviously counsel for the government, was first, the penalties and statute of limitations mirror each other. And that was one of his number one points. Article 120 says that rape may be punished by death, and Article 43 refers to offenses punishable by death. And so Congress was referring the limitation provision to Article 20. And basically, the government's top line article is, what are we even talking about? This is something that is just plainly there. And during oral arguments, and if you read the briefs, that is something that it becomes very kind of profound as one of their kind of top line arguments. Like, there really shouldn't be a discussion about this. Some of his other points is that he said that Congress left no doubt in Article 18. Article 18 is the general court martial provision that allows for death penalty when specifically enumerated, and it's authorized by the UCMJ. He pointed out that Congress borrowed language of the military limitations. And for the past 80 years, every Article 3 judge has read the phrase punishable by death in the context to refer to that statutory punishment. So this is not new. We're at the same place we always have been. The last point is that they try to make and use some of his time, more time in the oral argument than they use in the brief, was that they don't need to reach a constitutional question when a case is resolved on the grounds of statutory interpretation. And you're going to hear as we go through some of the questions that a lot of the questions really revolved around two major concepts, was whether this is a constitutional question in the first place, or whether this is just simply an issue of statutory interpretation. Now, as it relates to Professor Stephen, damn, I'm going to say his name wrong again. How do you say his name again?
Vladek.
Vladek. Sorry. I said earlier that it sounds very like a very mysterious person who wears a cloak at night. Last name. Cool last name. You know, they specifically in 1953 talked about courts have understood the Eighth Amendment applies to members of the military, and thus far, under Coker, death is foreclosed. And it's interesting that both of the councils kind of took the same approaches. What are we talking about? This is something that has already been talked about, ruled about. We're really above the waterline when it comes to how the court should be interpreting these. It's something that Congress made clear, the court has made clear, and this is how things should come down. The second point that kind of top level point they make is that as death is foreclosed as a punishment for rape under Corker, it was therefore subject to a 5-year statute of limitation after 1986. And the 2003 amendment to the UCMJ would have actually reduced the statute of limitations. And the last argument, which I found was one of the more powerful arguments, is in 2006, the statute of limitations for rape under UCMJ was extended indefinitely. And none of the conduct of this case took place after 2006, meaning that Congress knew what it was talking about and amended the UCMJ to be more in line with how they saw things. And they did it at that point. So therefore, there shouldn't be a lot of ambiguity about what we're talking about.
And so I think with that, Arthur, we're going to turn to our expected outcome.
Yeah. So before I get into that, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the questions, because I think, you know, the questions are you know, for, you know, people who study the Supreme Court, the questions asked very often kind of are the only tea leaves we have in order to look at what the outcome's on. So I'm going to start with some of the questions to the Solicitor General. And the first, you know, a series kind of came from Justice Thomas, that, you know, asked several questions that literally kind of set up hypotheticals. So the first one, it was, even if you accept Corker, will this apply to the statute of limitations? And the Solicitor General was, you know, frank and said, yeah, we think there's a different rule in the military. So even if Article 43 looks outside the Eighth Amendment, we say for there's three major reasons why Corker doesn't apply. First, the harms are different. Military rape can destroy a platoon. It can undermine forces, readiness. It can really damage foreign relations. As somebody who served in Iraq when a rape charge came out from a young Marine in Fallujah for a civilian woman living in the village, it really did affect the way we could patrol that city. So, I mean, that was directly on point and true. The second point the Solicitor General makes is there's no settled national consequence against the death penalty for rape in the military. As the court, you know, basically laid out in Corker and Kennedy. And third, the court defers to the Congress's judgment as it relates to military justice. And this is a clear precedent. Congress gets to decide how the military justice system is going to be kind of laid out. Another area that I thought was really interesting is Justice Sotomayor talked a lot about the statute of limitations and how it's different from the Corker question. And the Solicitor General, you know, agreed and said that those are two major arguments. We think that Congress made both of those decisions already, though. And even if it's not allowed to impose the death penalty under the Constitution, it said it still said that it thought that these types of serious offenses could be prosecuted at any time. So even if Corker applied, it still doesn't affect the statute of limitations question because Congress made that really clear. Alito asked some really interesting questions. One that I thought was fascinating, that, you know, it basically said, ask the Solicitor General, don't some of these statute of limitations really work against you? Specifically, the canon of statute of limitations, which is the canon of statute of limitations is really easy. It should be read narrowly. And also the rule of lenity, which you should rule something in favor of easing up. And the Solicitor General said, we don't think there's any ambiguity. So none of those apply. It's really clear here. And then finally, Justice Gorsuch asked the Solicitor General that suppose that the court, you know, found that there was a definitive answer and that punishable by rape was unconstitutional in the military context, would that affect the government's response? And the Solicitor General said it might affect the tip of the spear argument they were making. But it wouldn't affect their overarching argument that it doesn't affect the judgment that Congress made as it relates to statute of limitations for the crime of rape in the military. So even if we lose on our main argument, our backup argument prevails. Now, Professor Vladek, he had a different kind of series of questions, but his questions, kind of applied more towards his understanding of how things worked in the military. Breyer asked, several questions. The first being, did you find any military documents or history to support their history? And there was a long case, going into Navy, Marine Corps, Court of Military Reviews, looking at different types of wars and conflicts. Breyer also asked during the history of this, do you run into any legislative history or any type of military jurisprudence that said that this is a good idea to have the statute of limitations work this way? And the professor was, honest and said, no, Justice Breyer, and I'm quoting this. And I think that only reinforces our position that Congress was not specifically thinking about rape at the time in 1986 when it finally did all of its thinking specifically about rape as it clearly laid out. And it was clearly put into the 2003 and 2006 justifications. Real quick, I know that we're I'm running out of my 4 minutes I had scheduled for this little segment, but Justice Kagan asked specific questions about what was where in the text is punishable by death specifically laid out, and where are they drawing this from? Professor Vladek said that there's two different ways to read punishable, which I actually found was one of the more unique arguments. And I think it's a bit much for the other side to say that their plain meaning understanding is that since Article III court has never read it to mean that within 80 years. And I think that was an actual pretty powerful argument. And the last thing I'll go into is Justice Kavanaugh argues that the government basically laid out, the government argues that Article 55 generalized bar cannot be used to foreclose punishment authorized anywhere in the code, and asked if they can respond. And Professor Vladek had, a pretty good answer. He said, yeah, and there's two reasons. One, the government's positions require people to ignore the timing. And two, even if Congress came back after Corker and reaffirmed the death penalty, then this would be a different case because timing is very, very important in this case. I'm going to give my anticipated outcome, and then I'm going to kick it back over to Professor Sala. Some last statements will be about why I'm kind of thinking that way. So, again, as with anything, there's uncertainty when it comes to the Supreme Court, but I think the outcome is slightly favored in the sense of for the government. I think the court will address the statutory question, ruling in favor of the United States, and punt on applying Corker to the UCMJ with the majority of Roberts, Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh, and maybe even Kagan and Breyer. Professor Sala.
Thanks, Arthur. I'll just be very brief. I also think the court comes back in favor of the government here, but I think that they're going to address whether the Eighth Amendment applies in the military context, specifically whether Coker v. Georgia and Kennedy v. Louisiana are going to apply in the military context. I think there's five votes there, maybe more.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.